Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Two fires set nerves on edge across East County over the weekend on the anniversary of the deadly 2000 firestorms. An aerobatics stunt plane that crashed near El Capitan Reservoir on Saturday was operated by a company with a history of safety violations and at least one previous fatal crash. It sparked a brush fire that burned 20 acres. Hear our special report on today's show. Also this weekend, a fire in Campo scorched around 100 acres. A red flag warning for high fire danger, along with an extreme heat warning, is in effect today through Wednesday for our region. So please, listeners, be careful. From Public News Service, a new report warns that the mega fires that charred much of Northern California earlier this month are tied to climate change, and we can expect more and worse firestorms to come. Governor Jerry Brown has signed a new bill into law waiving certain building code requirements to help solve the shelter emergency for homeless people in several areas of the state, including the city of San Diego. In El Cajon, a hope rally to draw attention to domestic violence will be held in El Cajon this Tuesday. On Crime Beat, hear about a frightening attack on a woman walking on a trail in El Cajon who was strangled but managed to escape her assailant. Learn about a settlement reached by California and other states with General Motors over the company's failure to properly warn consumers about faulty ignition switches that were recalled due to the dangers they posed to motorists. On Green Scene, hear about National Wildlife Federation's effort to save monarch butterflies through its Million Pollinator Gardens Challenge. Then, hear about Tony the Movie, a film on homelessness in our region, showing October 30th in La Mesa, along with a panel discussion by local experts. Lake Jennings will be closed for 2 weeks starting October 30th, and we'll tell you why on today's show. And then on the second half of our show, in honor of the 10th anniversary of those deadly 2000 firestorms, I'll be sharing my recollections as a reporter on the scene and what it was like going behind fire lines to report on what at the time was the worst natural disaster in U.S. history. Then on Destination East County, hear about hot events coming up across our region, from Halloween happenings to the Mother Goose Parade. And finally, from Public News Service, we'll have some of today's top national news headlines, including President Trump's push to pass his budget bill and a troubling new right-to-discriminate effort at the federal level. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. A small plane that crashed late Saturday afternoon east of the El Capitan Reservoir in East County sparked a 20-acre brush fire during a red flag warning for high fire danger. The plane was an extra EA-300L plane registered to KD Leasing in Henderson, Nevada, according to the National Transportation Safety Administration. The company Sky Combat Ace reportedly offered aerobatics rides with the plane to thrill-seeking passengers out of Gillespie Field in El Cajon. Sky Combat Ace even allowed paid passengers the opportunity to fly the plane in aerobatics and air combat simulations with no experience necessary, though dual controls allow the pilot to take control if needed, according to their website. The Sky Combat plane that went down had taken off from Gillespie en route to Nevada, NBC7 reports. Sky Combat Ace had a prior fatal crash of the same model plane in Nevada, and that same plane had previously been cited by the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, for violating federal law with illegal and dangerous maneuvers, the Las Vegas Journal-Review reported in May of last year. According to an FAA enforcement letter pending at that time, the plane executed an aileron or barrel roll below 1,500 feet above the surface over the Colorado River near Hoover Dam in 2015 that was, quote, so careless or reckless as to endanger the life or property of another, the FAA stated. In last year's crash of a plane that took off from Las Vegas for a bachelor party, the pilot took off during a thunderstorm so severe that some passengers opted to forfeit hefty fees rather than take that flight. The company has also had multiple close calls in the past, including mechanical failures and running over a mechanic on a runway, as well as complaints from residents in Nevada of stunts over neighborhoods, our investigation found. Despite this, the company still touts a safe record on its site, though it notes that such activities do have inherent risks. It is not yet known what caused the fatal crash that is presumed to have killed the pilot and a passenger. The U.S. Forest Service, which owns the land where the plane went down, has indicated the crash was unsurvivable, News 8 reports. A post on Brushfire Party Line's Facebook page Saturday indicated a nearby resident saw aerobatics stunt maneuvers being performed in the vicinity shortly before the crash. The identities of the victims have not yet been released. FAA records indicate that in recent years, several deaths have occurred annually from aerobatic stunts, usually at air shows. The crash raises serious questions about the safety of such activities and the risks to passengers that may not be adequately disclosed. The risk to neighboring residents is also an issue. Locally, here in East County, the fire caused by Saturday's crash led retired CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Bob Robeson, a Lakeside resident, to issue a warning for Lakeside's El Monte and Eucalyptus Hills neighbors to, quote, prepare for the worst, unquote, given the high winds and lack of access by ground crews late in the day when the plane went down behind a locked gate on federal land. There is also the issue of firefighting costs incurred by multiple agencies in order to douse the blaze caused by the crash, and the impact of a fiery crash on public lands to recreational use and wildlife in a region already scarred by multiple past wildfires. Those include the 2003 Cedar Fire and the deadly 2007 firestorms that occurred 10 years ago to the very date of this plane crash. Those fires sparked a 500,000 evacuations, cost 10 lives, and burned down thousands of homes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The death toll has risen to 42 in the massive fires that have raged through Santa Rosa, Napa, and Sonoma over the past week, and a new report says California can expect more of these megafires in years to come. Researchers from the National Wildlife Federation note that in parts of California, fire season is now 50 days longer than it was in 1979 and predicts that some areas will start to see year-round fire seasons. Howard Penn, with the nonprofit Conservation and Planning League, says suburban sprawl has led millions of Californians to move into areas at high risk for fire.
We're having more structures and more lives lost in these type of wildfires because we have more growth into the wildfire areas. We need to be more strategic and more thoughtful about how we grow and how we build in those areas or not build in those areas.
The report also blames dry conditions linked to climate change and calls for more funding for fuel load reduction programs, prescribed burns that clear out the excess of dry brush that grew after last winter's unusually wet weather. Shannon Hike-Williams, a climate and energy policy advisor for the National Wildlife Federation, says Congress needs to designate a special disaster fund for megafires like we do for hurricanes, because right now the Forest Service is forced to fight fires by raiding funds meant for recreation, forest restoration, and wildlife management.
Wildfires are demanding a huge amount of resources to try and keep under control. The U.S. Forest Service is spending about $1 billion a year fighting blazes, which is over half the agency's budget, and that number is growing quickly.
The report finds that more than 8.5 million acres have burned in the United States so far this year, and the area burned annually in the Southwest has increased by 1,200% over the past 40 years. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A brush fire named the Church Fire scorched an estimated 100 acres on the Campo Indian Reservation over the weekend. The blaze that began on Friday near Church Road and Highway 94 forced evacuations and closure of Highway 94 for several hours, with residents told to shelter at the Golden Acorn Casino. Cause of the fire has not yet been determined. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Governor Jerry Brown has signed Assembly Bill 932 authorizing suspension of state and local building standards for 3 years upon declaration of a shelter crisis in specified areas, including the city of San Diego, in order to create homeless shelters on an emergency basis. California has over 118,000 homeless people, the largest homeless population in the nation, fueled in part by a housing affordability crisis. The city of San Diego has over 5 5,000 homeless residents, with most unsheltered. Los Angeles has the most homeless in the state, over 34,000, and more than 25,000 of those are unsheltered, according to a press release by Assemblyman Phil Ting, author of the bill. In a signing statement, Governor Brown says, "The thousands and thousands of men and women living on our streets are looking to the leaders of these communities for decent shelter and a place of dwelling, not abandonment." He urges cities to show creativity and compassion to the growing number of homeless people, adding, "Don't let them down." The governor urged the cities and counties included in the order to use the extraordinary grant of exception wisely and expeditiously. The new law applies to the city of San Diego, but not to San Diego County, so it won't affect our region's unincorporated areas. It also includes the cities of Berkeley, Emeryville, Los Angeles, Oakland, the county of Santa Clara, and both the city and county of San Francisco. Emergency housing may include homeless shelters for the homeless on any land owned or leased by the city of San Diego, including building shelters on land acquired with low and moderate income housing funds. The action comes amid a statewide emergency declaration issued over a hepatitis A outbreak that started among San Diego's homeless population. Despite the waiver of some building code requirements, San Diego and other cities and counties named in the measure signed by Governor Brown must still provide minimum health and safety requirements. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jean Carpenter.
The National Weather Service in San Diego has issued a red flag warning for high fire danger as well as an excessive heat warning. Temperatures on Monday and Tuesday could top 100 degrees in our inland region and may stay above 70 degrees even at night. Santa Ana winds have also swept into the area, which along with low humidity and high temperatures means extremely high fire danger through at least Wednesday. All county residents and visitors are asked to please take the following precautions. Avoid activities with open flames or sparks. Don't park on dry grass. Practice safe towing to avoid sparks. Properly discard cigarettes. Obey burn bans now in effect, including campfires except in designated campgrounds. And if a fire does occur, evacuate if ordered by officials. The National Weather Service warns any fires that develop will likely spread quickly. The public is also urged by fire officials to please report any sightings of smoke immediately. County officials advise having a grab-and-go kit ready and be prepared to evacuate on just a few minutes' notice. As we saw from the recent fires in Northern California, as well as the 2003 and 2007 firestorms in San Diego County, which also occurred in October, a fire during these conditions can swiftly burn beyond the backcountry and into suburban and urban neighborhoods across our region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The East County Coalition will hold a Hope Rally on Tuesday, October 24th in El Cajon, where community residents and professionals who help domestic violence survivors will walk, rally, and give presentations to raise awareness about domestic violence. Last year, there were nearly 17,000 domestic violence incidents reported in San Diego County and up to a dozen homicides related to domestic violence. Homicide victims included two residents of El Cajon. 34-year-old Mary Catherine Fanunu was shot to death by her estranged spouse in their El Cajon home on January 1, 2016. He was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to 50 years to life in prison. On May 13th of last year, 41-year-old Ginger Curtis was stabbed to death by her boyfriend, who was killed in an accident while evading the police. Hoping to help prevent such tragedies and get help for victims of domestic violence, the Hope Rally will begin with a walk at 9:30 on Tuesday morning, starting at the El Cajon Police Department. Walkers will head down Magnolia and conclude at Prescott Promenade near the Community Center in downtown El Cajon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. A $1,000 reward is offered for information leading to arrest of a suspect who assaulted and strangled a woman Friday night, October 20th, on a hillside trail east of Starlight Mobile Home Park that's located on East Bradley in unincorporated El Cajon. The victim reported that the suspect wrapped a cable-like rope around her neck, nearly causing her to lose consciousness. Fortunately, she was able to escape from the suspect's hold, says Sergeant Miguel Lopez. The victim last saw the suspect running toward the hillside. Sheriff's dispatch received a 911 call at 9:16 p.m. Friday night, reporting the assault with a deadly weapon. The suspect is described as an African-American male about 6 feet tall in his mid-30s. He was wearing a blue plaid shirt and baggy jeans. Sheriff's deputies responded, and a helicopter search of the area was conducted, but the suspect was not located. The victim was taken to a hospital for injuries she sustained to her neck. If you have any information on this crime, please call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. Again, that number is 888-580-8477. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for a $1,000 reward for any information leading to an arrest on felony charges in this case.
California Attorney General Javier Becerra has announced a $120 million multi-state settlement with General Motors Company over allegations that the automaker concealed safety issues regarding defective ignition switches in GM vehicles. California will receive over $7 million under the settlement that includes 49 states. The deal also requires that GM cease making misrepresentations to consumers regarding unsafe vehicles. Becerra states, "What GM did is inexcusable. It took nearly a decade for the company to inform consumers that its ignition switches were defective." He says the settlement holds GM accountable for violating the law, which threatened the lives of millions of Americans. California's Attorney General adds, "All companies should be put on notice. The California Department of Justice has zero tolerance for those who put profits over people." Back in 2014, GM issued 7 vehicle recalls in response to unintended key rotation and/or ignition switch-related issues, which have affected over 9 million vehicles in the U.S. The recalls involved a defective ignition switch, which, under certain conditions, could move out of the run position to the accessory or off position. If this occurs, the driver experiences a loss of electrical systems, including power steering and power brakes. If a collision occurs while the ignition switch is in the accessory or off position, the vehicle's safety airbags may also fail to deploy, increasing the risk of serious injury or death. The states allege that certain employees of GM knew as early as 2004 that the ignition switch posed a safety defect because it could cause airbag non-deployment. However, GM personnel decided it wasn't a safety concern and delayed making recalls. GM continued to market reliability and safety of its motor vehicles, which were equipped with this defective ignition switch. The states alleged that these actions were unfair and deceptive, also violating state consumer protection laws, including California's unfair competition law. Under the stipulated judgment, which will be presented to the Los Angeles Superior Court for approval, GM must not represent that a motor vehicle is safe unless the company has complied with federal motor vehicle safety standards. The company is also prohibited from certifying pre-owned vehicles as safe unless any recall safety issues have been fixed through repairs. GM must notify dealers that all recall repairs must be completed before any vehicle is sold. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
If you've ever watched the process of a caterpillar becoming a vividly colorful monarch butterfly, you probably have an appreciation for a challenge being issued by the National Pollinator Garden Network. The Million Pollinator Garden Challenge calls on everyone, from horticulture professionals to school children and volunteers, to help create and register 1 million pollinator gardens by the end of this year. Pollinator declines in recent decades have been extreme, and Mary Phillips with the National Wildlife Federation's Garden for Wildlife program says monarch populations have plummeted 90% in the last 20 years.
Monarchs are something people identify. It's an iconic butterfly that many of us have experienced in our childhood. So that's been an amazing motivator to get people to focus and engage around the pollinator issue.
National Garden Clubs, which is headquartered in St. Louis, is among the organizations joining in to encourage people from all walks of life to create their own pollinator gardens. Habitat loss, parasites, and pesticides are among the causes of pollinator declines. Phillips notes that a Cornell study found one-third of all the food we eat is the direct result of pollinators. Phillips says the Garden for Wildlife program helps not only wildlife, but also gives people a daily connection to the natural world, whether they create a garden in the city or the country.
It's very small to very big. Some of these are creating tremendous acres of habitat, and others are kind of connecting corridors across urban settings. So both of those approaches are equally valuable.
Million Pollinator Garden Challenge participants can learn more and register their pollinator gardens online. Plus, they can take a look at the challenge map. For Public News Service, I'm Kevin Patrick.
You're invited to join La Mesa Conversations and the La Mesa First United Methodist Church's Community Outreach Ministry for a joint presentation of the new film, Tony, the Movie, a film about homelessness in San Diego. The film will be shown on October 30th. The screening at the church will be followed by a panel presentation and discussion about homelessness in San Diego and La Mesa with a question and answer session. Panel participants will include director Dennis Stein, the movie's star, Tony Rodriguez, homeless advocate Michael McConnell, and Pastor Albert Kim. The program is from 6 to 8 p.m. with an optional buffet dinner at 5:30. A suggested donation will help support programs to benefit the homeless. For registration, you can visit the La Mesa Conversation Facebook page. To learn more about Tony the Movie, you can visit tony-themovie.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the Helix Water District. Lake Jennings, the lake, not the campground, will be closed to all activities, including fishing and boating, from October 30th through November 16th, so that the Helix Water District can study the lake's hydraulics. Helix is working with the Scripps Institution of Oceanography to conduct the testing. The goal is to gather data to support development of a computer model that can be used to predict the lake's hydraulic mixing actions. Scripps will use a dye that's approved by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as part of the testing process, and it may be possible during that testing to see a color in the lake water that could range from pink to red. The dye is not harmful, the district says, and will dissipate over the course of the testing period. Not to worry, you won't be drinking the water from Lake Jennings during the testing period.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show. 10 years ago, I was among the first reporters on the scene when the devastating 2007 firestorms began. I couldn't believe that just 4 years after the deadly Cedar Fire, the nightmare was occurring again, on what turned out to be an even more horrific scale. Out of the ashes of those fires, East County Magazine was born, along with our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts, to help fill a need for critical information in real time when people need news the most. Today, in order to preserve the memories of those 2007 firestorms so that we will never forget and always be vigilant, I've decided to share my recollections as a reporter covering what became one of the worst natural disasters in the nation. That Sunday morning, October 21, 2007, I was on my way to cover an event at Cuyamaca College for a local weekly newspaper, the East County Californian, when I looked south and I saw a massive wall of smoke boiling up, blotting out the sun. Instinctively, I turned south onto Highway 94, abandoning my plans to cover the college event,
and pulled into the lot by the Barrett Junction Cafe down the hill from Potrero, where 100-mile-an-hour hurricane-force winds sent that inferno exploding over the mountainside straight toward me. Already, firefighters from as far away as Miramar were on the scene. Just moments after I arrived, firefighters with bullhorns shouted evacuation orders. Someone yelled, "Run for your lives!" No one needed persuading. Even a group of Hell's Angel bikers raced toward their motorcycles and burned rubber hauling out of there. I hopped back in my car and drove north, along with a photographer, watching in my rearview mirror as the fire consumed much of the landscape behind me in a scene straight out of hell. That was the Harris Fire, the first of 7 firestorms in San Diego County over the coming days. Collectively, these were the largest in San Diego County's history. The 2007 firestorms here proved more destructive in size, duration, and property damage than even the 2003 Cedar Fire, which up until then was the worst firestorm in California history. Although the Cedar Fire still holds the records for the most fatalities in San Diego County. And sadly, both have been surpassed by the fires in Northern California in the last couple of weeks. Collectively, those 7 fires in San Diego County charred 369,000 acres. That's around 13% of the county's total landmass, according to the 2007 San Diego County Firestorms After Action Report. It destroyed over 1,600 homes and more than 1,000 other structures. 10 people lost their lives. And 89 firefighters, as well as 23 civilians, were injured. Those fires triggered the evacuation of over 500,000 people, at the time, the largest evacuation for a natural disaster ever in the United States. 3,000 animals were also rescued, although the fire had devastating impacts on wildlife as well as people. Firefighting costs for the 4 largest blazes, the Harris, Witch Creek, Rice Canyon, and Pumacha fires, cost over $41 million. And total damages from all the fires were forecast to exceed $1.5 billion. My reporting focused on the Harris Fire, which scorched a destructive swath all the way to the Otay and Sweetwater reservoirs in the west, Campo in the east, the border to the south, and Rancho San Diego to the north. I was writing, as mentioned, for a print weekly newspaper, which couldn't even print the news until too late to serve as a warning, only document what happened after the fact for the historical record. After those fires, I wrote a grant to start up East County Magazine and the East County Magazine Wildfire and Emergency Alerts so that our region would have a source of live news as well as an alert system to supplement other alerts that at the time, though helpful for some, came too late or not at all for others. That first day of the fire, I interviewed evacuees in a parking lot. At Steel Canyon High School, including a Hispanic man who was deeply troubled because Border Patrol agents had been sent to evacuate a trailer park where he lived. He told me that some residents who were undocumented were afraid and didn't answer the door, so they didn't know about the fire. He went back to speak with them in Spanish and enabled many to escape safely. Sadly, some undocumented immigrants were less fortunate. Several recent border crossers died, trapped when flames overtook a canyon they were in. Another death and injury struck me hard. Thomas Varshak was killed, and his 15-year-old son, Richard Varshak, was severely burned outside their home in Potrero. Firefighters also suffered injuries in that tragic incident. On the road out while evacuating, the family met up with firefighters and urged them to save their home on a remote ridge. Thomas and Richard followed the firefighters on an all-terrain vehicle, or ATV, but it broke down. They knocked on the windows of the fire engine, and the crew let them inside. The firefighters tried to save the Varshak's mobile home and a shed, but the fire was just too intense. As the captain tried to back the fire truck away, the engine died, and the truck was engulfed in flames. Richard managed to escape, but was badly burned, and his father perished in the flames. I knew the Varshak family. Thomas' brother, George Varshak, had been the assistant manager at Thurl Music Company, where I had worked as a teenager, and his son, George Jr., was a talented pianist who would often come in the store, and we played duets together. The thought of the grief they were going through brought tears to my eyes when I heard the tragic news. The accounts of just what happened and who was at fault there differ. Surviving family members filed a lawsuit against CAL FIRE, but lost, a judge ruled that sovereign immunity protected the agency against tragedies that occurred as part of their duties fighting fires and trying to rescue people. Later, during the seemingly endless firestorm, evacuees were moved from the school I'd visited as flames threatened that area, too. I went to a shopping center in Rancho San Diego, where Target and Hooli's are located. The scene was surreal. Evacuees, some moved for the second or third time, parked in RVs or cars in the parking lot. A makeshift corral with temporary fencing had been erected behind the center. Horses were being tended by volunteers, and then the fire began encroaching over the hill behind the shopping mall. The horses whinnied nervously as firefighters decided to cut a fire break partway down the hill, igniting tinder-dry brush just a short distance above. I stood transfixed and fearful, knowing that backfires can sometimes get out of control in high winds, but it was the only chance to save the shopping center. People stood staring upwards, some seated in lawn chairs, one man with a parrot on his shoulder. The smoke was so thick and orange that it blotted out the sun. Mercifully, the firefighters' efforts were successful and the shopping center was saved. At one point, evacuation orders came within 2 miles of my own home on the south slope of Mount Helix. I watched with trepidation as flames glowed orange on Mount Miguel one night, visible from my driveway. I drove to the top of Mount Helix and shot photos, with smoke spanning the entire horizon. So many people had to flee that the county eventually opened up Qualcomm Stadium to take in evacuees. Meanwhile, fires were spreading across North County, too. I called a publisher at Decor and Style magazine in Solano Beach to cancel a meeting I had with my editor there, only to learn that they had just been given evacuation orders, and their office was a block from the beach. Authorities feared those fires could potentially burn all the way to the sea as fires merged to form a daunting firewall 100 miles long. On the second or third night of the fire, the blaze doubled back to again threaten the town of Potrero, high in the southeastern mountains of East County. I began getting emails at midnight from people I'd interviewed in the past who were trapped there, pleading with me for help. Jan Hedlund, a planner I'd interviewed for a series of stories on Blackwater seeking to build a paramilitary camp in Potrero, told me their phone lines and cell phone towers in the town had all burned down, and they had no way to get information except the Internet. The county emergency site was crashed from so many people trying to access it. Flames were all around, and some roads were blocked. They didn't know where to go or how to evacuate safely. Thankfully, I was able to find that information they needed and send it to them by email, though most chose not to leave. These rural residents of hardy pioneer stock were mistrustful of authorities, having lived through other wildfires, where they said no fire engines ever showed up, and they were left to douse burning embers themselves, saving many homes. This is very dangerous, putting lives at risk, and I don't recommend it, but for some, saving a lifetime of memories and all that they owned seemed worth that risk. One community planner, Thel Fowler, was facing a recall election for his vote for the Blackwater Project, and yet he stayed behind and bravely saved several neighbors' homes with a garden hose, dousing embers. Some Potrero residents escaped the flames by standing on chairs or ladders and hopping over the border fence into Mexico, an argument against building a truly impenetrable wall. How many more might have died if a towering wall had been in place back then? One night I got a call advising me that the site Blackwater swore could never burn, a box canyon with only one steep road in and out where they planned to put their training camp and an arsenal, was on fire. Early the next morning, I slipped up past fire lines on a back road and documented firefighters dousing still smoldering blackened patches on the valley floor. I interviewed a fire chief on scene and saw red streaks from fire retardant dropped by a massive firefighting plane during the night. Knowing that Potrero was running out of supplies and that somehow no relief agencies had come to help, wishing perhaps that residents would just evacuate, I loaded up my trunk with water bottles, oranges from my backyard trees, diapers for infants, and a few other necessities which I donated to those in need. The general store was taking donations and passing them out to residents. I visited a makeshift soup kitchen set up by a neighbor of Jan Hedlund's, serving up meals for the entire community. This was a close-knit town of only about 800 residents. Some streets were buried in mounds of ashes that also filled the air, stinging the eyes and prompting coughing. Some homes had burned,
ghost chimneys rising like spectral fingers from the rubble. Blackwater tried to do a good deed. The paramilitary contractor, still hoping to win hearts of Potrero residents opposed to its training camp plan, donated the use of huge military tents and cots that they set up across the street from the Barrett Junction Cafe, free for any evacuees who needed a safe place to stay. But when I stopped by, not a single resident had come there, too proud to take help from a company most felt was going to destroy the peace and tranquility of their town. Now, just a couple of weeks after that fire, the town voted overwhelmingly to recall all five planners who voted for Blackwater's project. Although the ultimate decision would have been up to county supervisors, Blackwater ultimately withdrew its plans, citing the high cost of noise abatement, although they'd known that cost all along. Perhaps the vision of their planned paramilitary encampment, consumed by the fury of an East County firestorm, convinced them to seek a safer location. After my visit behind fire lines in Potrero, I planned to head out east, through Campo, but an employee at the general store warned me not to, since a sniper had taken shots at vehicles, he said, including a fire truck. So I drove to the roadblock on Highway 94, going west to Barrett Junction, a steep, tortuous road on the best of days. A deputy at the roadblock told me that they had just allowed the first vehicle to pass through, a California Highway Patrol car. I showed my press pass, and he said I could take my chances. It was a hair-raising and heart-wrenching drive. The guardrail was gone, burned away, and in places, part of the roadway had melted. I hugged the center line and at times drove on the wrong side of the road. In places, it was hundreds of feet, maybe 1,000 feet or more, down to the canyon floor, with no barrier in place. I tried not to look, as my photographer and I wove our way down that treacherous road. It was like driving through a moonscape. Every living thing was blackened. Even the rocks were scorched. Further down toward Dulzura, there were patches of green where the fire had hopscotched, sparing one home, reducing another to a smoldering pile of ashes. Burned vehicles were juxtaposed against brightly colored children's toys and the occasional live oak tree that had somehow been spared. I drove that road again in spring, maybe 5 or 6 months later, and I was surprised to find fields of wildflowers abloom, including wind-borne seeds blown in by the firestorm. Brilliant orange poppies, blue lupines, and little yellow blossoms all over. Life did indeed return as the backcountry began to recover. But for those who lost homes, the process has been much slower. Some were never able to rebuild, or chose to build new lives elsewhere. For those who lost loved ones, the wounds will never heal. Some survivors now have new homes, like proverbial phoenixes risen from the ashes of the past, and yet a whiff of smoke still sparks a visceral sense of fear. After the fires, the hardest part of this story was interviewing people who had lost everything. I was a freelancer back then for several other publications, some of them long gone now, and the only copies of my works gone too. So I don't remember all the names. But the faces, the voices, and the tears of the fire survivors I met are forever emblazoned in my memory. One elderly woman told me the thing she regretted most was losing her wedding ring, which she'd removed to wash the dishes. She'd recently been widowed, and her home was lost to the flames. And then she called me. Miraculously, a firefighter came to her and told her he'd been fighting the fire at her home and regretted that he could not save it, but he did salvage one thing gleaming amid the soot and ash. Her wedding ring. I remember kneeling in the ashes of a home lost in Ramona from the Witch Creek fire, as a survivor stoically searched for anything she could salvage. There wasn't much, a shard of burned pottery from her studio, seemingly all that remained. Then she walked to a rose garden her late mother had planted, heirloom plants burned to ashes. A bittersweet smile formed as she spotted a single rosebud poking up through the ashes, reaching toward the sunlight, a divine sign, she believed, symbolizing that life goes on, hope rising from despair. The county, CAL FIRE, and other firefighting agencies have learned a great deal from those fires. It's a testament to their good works that we haven't had another raging inferno on the scale of those 2003 or 2007 firestorms in the past decade, though there have been smaller but still destructive fires, such as the Chariot Fire that torched Mount Laguna, or the Border Fire that again burned parts of Potrero and stole two lives. But we are seeing much better coordination and communication among multiple fire agencies, better equipment, contributions from Native American tribes, the county, and SDG&E, which CAL FIRE held responsible for three of those 2007 fires. They've since fire-hardened lines, brought in a firefighting helicopter, and installed the largest weather station system owned by any utility in the United States to help monitor for extreme fire conditions. After the fires, I visited the site where the Harris Fire was believed to have started, off of Harris Ranch Road. The cause of the Harris Fire remains unknown. Power lines were ruled out. There were none at the site. There were many rumors, but none have ever been confirmed, and no one was ever held responsible for starting the Harris Fire that cost so many lives and destroyed countless streams. We've learned a lot from those fires, but there's still a lot more work to do. Fire seasons are lasting 50% longer in California now than back then due to climate change, fire officials and climate experts warn. The U.S. Forest Service is now spending 70% of its budget on firefighting, which means it has no choice but to take money from other funds, including funds normally used to prevent fires. Congress has failed to step forward with that funding. So even as CAL FIRE, County FIRE, state and local officials work to make us safer, one thing all agree on is that it isn't a matter of if another severe firestorm will hit our region, but when. Our hearts go out to those who lost homes and loved ones in those fires. And listeners, for those of you who don't want to be left with only memories to cherish, please take steps now. Protect your homes and property. Clear your defensible space. Follow evacuation orders and have a go kit ready so that you and your family and your pets can stay safe if a firestorm threatens your area. If you want to receive free East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts by email, you can sign up at eastcountymagazine.org. And you can follow East County Alert on Twitter to receive messages on your mobile phone. As part of our commitment to keep you safe and informed during emergencies when you need news the most.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And this is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting Destination East County. We'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a Haunted Elks Lodge, a Halloween Harvest Festival, the Hills Halloween Party, a spooky campover, the Boulevard Boo Parade, a Hallow Scream Night, a High Desert Mountain Yoga Retreat, an Autumn Fest and Plant Sale, the Ramona Art and Wine Festival, a live hawk demonstration, a Veterans Day ceremony, and the 71st Annual Mother Goose Parade.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more. The Pumpkin Patch at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs invites you to enjoy the Pumpkin Patch weekends, complete with a corn maze, jumpy for kids, popcorn, and more. On Saturday, October 28th, the Alpine Stagecoach Lions Club will host a dog show, complete with costume contest from 1 to 4 p.m. For a full schedule of activities, you can visit summerspastfarms.com.
Scotty's Scare Trail, located at the Marshall Scotty's Abandoned Amusement Park in Flynn Springs, just east of El Cajon, is rumored to be haunted by old employees and children who never left, plus monsters roaming the premises. Open Fridays and Saturdays in October from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., the Scare Trail aims to create haunting memories for you, whether or not you've ever visited this once-enchanted destination as a child. For more chilling details, you can visit scaretrail.com.
The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association is hosting its 12th annual Pumpkin Express Halloween celebration. You're invited to ride decorated vintage rail cars through the San Diego County Mountains as fall descends upon the Campo community. Trains depart from the Campo Depot 3 times daily each Saturday and Sunday in October. Keep your eyes open for the Grim Reaper, who may be stowed away on board. After the train ride, children and their parents will enjoy decorating pumpkins from an indoor pumpkin patch. You can also walk through one of the 2 haunted trains with a creepy cast of goblins and ghouls, and take home a pumpkin for each train rider. For reservations and details, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org. The El Cajon Elks Lodge 1812 is teaming up with the local haunted house production company Scare Ventures to present a haunted lodge for the community in their parking lot from October 26th through the 31st. The haunted lodge will feature a maze and 4 different key scare areas for guests to experience, plus activities and booths. There will also be early evening hours set aside for children under 12 to experience a less scary version of the haunted lodge that is family-friendly, where youngsters will be treated to Halloween candy from nicer monsters as they tour the lodge maze. The Elks, who have been serving the community for 60 years, will donate 100% of the proceeds from the event for children's charities. For details and tickets, visit elcajonelks.com.
The Mount Helix Park Foundation and Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association are joining together for a fun-filled Halloween Harvest Family Festival at the top of Mount Helix Park for neighborhood families on Sunday, October 29th from 2 to 5 p.m. A costume parade for kids, live music by Lenny and the Lounge Lizards, plus booths from local businesses offering crafts, games, and treats will all be part of this fall festival. Park at the San Miguel Fire Station on Rivera, and you can take a free shuttle to the top of Mount Helix. For more information on the event, visit mounthelixpark.org. That's mthelixpark.org.
What's Halloween without a scary good costume contest? You're invited to put on those devil horns or vampire fangs and make your way to La Mesa's The Hills local pub on Saturday, October 28th for a Halloween house party and an opportunity to win $10,000 for best costume. The second annual costume contest starts at 8 p.m. with the best dress chosen by the crowd vote, so you may want to bring your friends. The grand prize will be given out at midnight, but the party will continue all night long, with special drinks such as Smoky Witch's Brew and Jungle Juice, plus DJ spinning your favorite hit songs. For details, you can visit thehillspub.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine will host its annual Spooky Campover from 3 p.m. Friday, October 27th until noon on October 28th. Bring your own pumpkin to carve, food, camping gear, and best costume. This event promises a wild and ghoulish night under the stars with the rescued animals. There will be a pumpkin carving, s'mores, campfire songs, costume contest, and animal feedings. For ticket prices and reservations, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org. All proceeds benefit this nonprofit facility's work to rescue exotic animals and provide a permanent home for them.
Celebrating its 13th year, the Boulevard Boo Parade will be held on Saturday, October 28th, starting at 10 a.m. With over 70 entries of live entertainment marching on 1 mile of El Cajon Boulevard in the college area, the parade will entertain you with spooky ghouls, goblins, ghosts, and witches to fill you with the Halloween spirit. Grandstand seating is available for purchase, or arrive early to stake out space along the parade route on El Cajon Boulevard between Rolando Boulevard and 60th Street.
Saps at Sea, the official Laurel and Hardy fan club in San Diego, will host its October event, Howlarious Hallow Scream, on October 28th at 7 p.m., with the doors opening at 6 p.m. at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. This month, the Saps are teaming up with the Theater Organ Society of San Diego to bring you spooky silent movies and a Felix the Cat cartoon, plus a special screening of the classic silent horror film, The Cat and the Canary.
You're invited to soak and stretch your way to relaxation and nirvana at the second High Mountain Desert Yoga Retreat, tucked among boulders high in the Incopa and Hakumba Mountains, near the eastern San Diego County line. This 4-day healing event from October 31st to November 3rd will include natural sulfur hot spring pools, healing sessions at the Desert View Tower, including Kundalini Tantra Yoga, Reiki healing, and crystal sound healing. Guests will also savor vegan meals, scenic hikes, and some desert surprises, plus a 3-day stay at the nearby Hakumba Hot Springs Resort. For more details or to register, visit desertviewtower.com.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will hold its Autumn Fest and Plant Sale on November 4th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The campus is located in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. This event features live entertainment, craft vendors, plant sales, kids' activities, gardening workshops, an Ask the Designer landscape consultation, advice from water agencies, and a beer garden. For more information, you can visit thegarden.org.
The 5th Annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival will be held at Beegent Ranch in Ramona Saturday, November 4th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Guests can view and purchase fine art in a variety of mediums, taste handcrafted wines, appetizers, lunch entrees, and desserts while picnicking in style beneath the shade of a giant oak tree. Vendors will also be on hand offering art and wine-themed items. A highlight of the event will be a live auction of 6 wine barrels painted by local artists. For tickets and details, you can visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net.
You're invited to join Falconer Bob Gordon with his hawk Huxley for a live hawk demonstration and Birds of Prey talk. Find them at Mission Trails Regional Park inside the Visitor Center on the first Sunday of each month from 9 a.m. to noon. The next demonstration is set for November 5th. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
The City of El Cajon and the El Cajon Veterans Commission will host a special ceremony honoring our veterans on Veterans Day, November 11th. The ceremony will take place from 1 to 2 p.m. at Centennial Plaza on Civic Center Way in downtown El Cajon, and the community is invited.
The 71st Annual Mother Goose Parade will be held on November 19th, the Sunday before Thanksgiving, starting at 1 p.m. This year's parade theme is Family Traditions. You can see over 100 colorful and exciting parade entries, including floats, marching bands, clowns, equestrians, TV celebrities, and Santa Claus. The parade grand marshal is Randy Jones, former San Diego Padre pitcher and Cy Young Award winner. The parade route runs along downtown's Main Street, from El Cajon Boulevard eastbound to First Street. This popular parade is one of the largest in Southern California and a wonderful way to officially kick off your holiday season. You can learn more at mothergooseparade.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, October the 23rd, 2017. I'm Mike Clifford. We begin the week with President Trump urging GOP House members to support the Senate budget bill. A new report tracks a growing right to discriminate at both the state and federal level, and we'll let you know why the Trump budget cuts are being labeled a threat to waterways in the Midwest. Topping our news, President Donald Trump held a weekend conference call with House Republicans. According to Politico, Trump delivered a tough message: get to work on tax reform, pass the Senate budget bill immediately, or face a bloodbath in 2018. The Senate plan is a tough sell for deficit hawks on the House side because that budget plan would add $1.5 trillion to the federal deficit over the next 10 years. The Washington Post reports Trump also told House Republicans that action on the tax bill could lead to other victories, including promised legislation to spur $1 trillion in investment in the nation's roads and other infrastructure, as well as welfare reform. State and federal laws and regulations that include exemptions based on religious or moral grounds are multiplying at an alarming rate, according to a new report. Andrea Sears has the details.
The Trump administration's Justice Department has instructed federal agencies to provide significant leeway to staff and government contractors seeking religious exemptions from federal laws, rules, and regulations. Inika Moshovic, who heads the Movement Advancement Project, says these and many other exemptions go far beyond hot-button issues such as access to abortion.
We've seen pediatricians refuse to treat children of same-sex couples, and we're seeing this span into other areas like attempts to allow churches to lobby or to allow adoption agencies to make decisions based on their religious beliefs.
Supporters of the exemption say they are in keeping with the First Amendment's protections of free speech and the free exercise of religion.
Since 1997, 21 states have passed laws expanding religious exemptions from regulations and laws. Minnesota's low-income families can get more help paying for child care starting today.
New provisions in the Child Care Assistance Program say families can enroll for a year instead of 6 months at a time, and that parents can go to school and still qualify for child care assistance. Karen DeVos runs a child care center in Ada in the northwestern part of the state. She says the new law will be especially beneficial in greater Minnesota, where many parents work seasonal or part-time jobs.
It's really important. Those children are going to be able to be here every single day, getting the same education as all of our other families, like our private pay families, being able to have that consistency on a daily basis.
About 30,000 Minnesota children will be affected by the changes, but 2,000 families are on a waiting list to get into the Child Care Assistance Program. I'm Lori Stern.
Meantime, Eric Tegedoff reports groups are mobilizing to protect the health coverage of some 350,000 Oregonians from an initiative that's headed for the January ballot.
Measure 101 challenges House Bill 2391, passed by this year's legislature and supported by most health insurers and providers, which funds insurance for low-income people on the Oregon Health Plan through a tax on health insurers and providers. Karen Escobar of the Dalles is bipolar and schizophrenic and relies on OHP for in-home care and medication. She says she couldn't function without it.
Without my mental meds, I couldn't live on my own. I can't even boil water without them.
Escobar says her medication also gives her the capacity to stay in contact with her family. Opponents of the tax claim it could increase health care costs and that the state should better manage its money to fill the health care budget gap.
Because of the initiative wording, a yes vote will keep the health care funding in place, a no vote will rescind it. Poverty in Pennsylvania is almost back to pre-recession levels, but the programs that made that possible are under threat from Washington, according to a new report. Census Bureau stats show poverty rates in the Keystone State reached 12.9% in 2016. That's a big improvement from a high of almost 16% in 2012. But according to Susan Moore, CEO of Community Action Association of Pennsylvania, those gains are in jeopardy.
The very programs that have helped to put poverty on a downward turn are on the chopping block from Congress and the Trump administration.
The administration says tax cuts will grow the economy, creating more jobs, but analysts say cuts to social programs would keep hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians in poverty. The Environmental Protection Agency has instructed two of its scientists and a contractor not to speak at a planned scientific conference today in Providence, Rhode Island. Washington Post reporting EPA officials confirmed Sunday its researchers would not present at the State of Narragansett Bay and its watershed program, but they did not offer an explanation for that decision. And finally, an effort to save Indiana's waterways is underway. Veronica Carter informs us it's all part of a push by the National Wildlife Federation to combat negative impacts under budget cuts proposed by the Trump administration.
The agency is conducting a campaign to educate people about what decreases in funding for habitat, wildlife, and water programs could mean for the state. Emily Wood with the Indiana Wildlife Federation says in Indiana, waterways are at risk with the repeal of the Clean Water Act.
On paper, it's a budget cut, and a lot of folks don't like to think about budgets. They're not very sexy, but when you start to look at all of the threads that are tied to different things, it's really easy to see that a budget cut in the way that it's proposed would be really, really damaging.
Wood says that drinking water for nearly 700,000 Hoosiers would be impacted by cuts proposed in Washington, D.C. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5.
If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.